Welcome to Reading the Grid, the podcast fueling your F1 passion. Each week, we explore the stories behind books, movies, and shows that highlight the history of this dynamic sport. Buckle up for a fast-paced journey through Formula One. Now let's jump into it.
In today's episode, we will be discussing Günther Steiner's best-selling book, Surviving to Drive, A Year Inside Formula One, an F1 book. It was written in a diary entry format, taking us behind the scene of the 2022 F1 season, which was exciting because there was a new set of regulation that took effect, as well as Haas, the team for which Günther Steiner was team principal at the time, had to deal with several unprecedented challenges, starting with losing its main sponsor and driver during testing just before the start of the season due to Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
Haas has been the only American constructor team on the grid since the 1970s. Steiner is from the region of Italy on the Italian-Austrian border, was Haas's team principal until 2024, when his contract was not renewed in the beginning of the silliest of silly seasons. He was instrumental in getting Haas into Formula One, a journey that started back in 2014. Previous to Haas, Günther had an extensive career in motorsports, including being managing director of Jaguar Racing under the mentorship of legendary Niki Lauda and technical operations director of its successor team, Red Bull Racing. Günther became a breakout star of Drive to Survive, and that is why the title of his book is a play on the show's name.
Before we begin our analysis of the book, we must address the answer to the clue to the identity of our favorite drivers. The clue was that Aaron's favorite driver's best race in 2024 was my favorite driver's second worst race in 2024. The race that we reference refers to 2024 British Grand Prix at Silverstone, which was won by
Lewis Hamilton, my favorite driver who was driving for Mercedes at the time of his win, which ended almost a three-year winless streak for Lewis, but who will be driving for Ferrari this year, where he will be the teammate of
Charles Leclerc, my favorite driver, who finished 14th in Silverstone, and that was not even his worst performance in 2024. However, he finally won in Monaco, his home Grand Prix, and he and Lewis are only two of three drivers who won their home Grand Prix last year. I think it is predestined that the year we decide to do our podcast, our favorite drivers become teammates.
We are friends. Our drivers are friends. Their pets are friends. We're now on the same team. Same podcast. It's going to be a good year, Ina. But we do want to assure our listeners that we will not only be discussing Ferrari and Charles and Lewis when the season starts, we will follow the storylines wherever they lead and discuss notable performances, regardless of which team or driver produces them. I will note, I am still a fan of Mercedes. I am a big fan of Toto Wolff. They have an intriguing lineup with Russell, who is head of the Grand Prix Drivers Association. And I'm really excited to see what Kimi Antonelli can do in his rookie year, how he completely skipped going to Williams and that Toto put him straight into the Mercedes and gave him the big seat. He is the highest paid rookie who is expected to be the second coming of Max Verstappen. Those are some pretty big shoes to fill. Plus you're filling Lewis Hamilton's seat. So no pressure, Kimi, but I cannot wait to see what happens.
Yeah, the pressure is going to be extremely high for him. And I can just imagine how George Russell feels. He had to spend 3 years at Williams before he was allowed to be a teammate of Lewis Hamilton. So have this rookie come straight to F1 without winning F2, which, by the way, George did on his first try. And so did my driver. I cannot wait to see what happened. But to get back to Surviving to Drive, Günther listed the following qualities that any top driver should have. And that is ability, promise, talent, experience, dedication, and the right attitude. And he meant it in a way that you take accountability for when things are not going well and always giving 100%. Aaron, I think our favorite drivers exhibit all of these qualities. Do you agree?
I think our drivers have all of those qualities and then some. Both of them have extreme mental toughness, which is also something that separates them from the rest of the pack. The right attitude is really a big one, and we'll talk about this a little bit more. Lewis's attitude and professionalism and polish is really what solidified him as my favorite driver. which we'll talk about when we get into the seasons of Drive to Survive.
I agree, and we definitely will. And I just want to add, exactly what you say applies to Lewis applies to Charles, because he has absolutely the right attitude in terms of when things take over on the track and your adrenaline starts pumping. And at that moment, when somebody asks you a question or when somebody contacts you on the radio, you just go off and vent. Despite those moments that every driver goes through, I think both of our drivers are very good at taking accountability for when things are not going their way, or they're the ones who are responsible for mistakes that are being made. And that makes them extremely relatable, and also a quality that makes us root for them.
It does. It shows that they're human. I tell my kids, everybody makes mistakes, but it's how you handle those mistakes that set you apart from others. And when they own the mistakes, or because they're the only ones in the car, they have a whole team behind them. And when they apologize for how things don't go on a weekend, it does make it more relatable. We always think drivers are superhuman because of what they do, but at the end of the day, they are human.
Absolutely. And just again, to go back to my favorite driver, he's always quick to praise his teammates if on very few occasions they get ahead of him, that it's just, I didn't do enough and they did a lot. Although he's not above using the trick that Gunter mentions in the book, which is using we when things don't go well. And like Gunter, I have to ask myself, who are these we? What the we?
What we are we talking about? Because there is only one driver in the car.
Yes. So
that's
I always
their
assume
decisions and reaction time when
correct.
They're on the when they're on the circuit.
Exactly. And the fact that, yes, we could refer to a team, but the team has two drivers. So are you saying we as in me and my teammate and everyone behind me, or me and my garage specifically? It's very vague, I'm sure on purpose, but it also, like Gunter, it drives me a little nuts.
Gunter has a lot of keen observations. For example, with regards to the 11th team joining the grid, he was very frank in how he thinks that the best way to get into F1 is to buy an existing team, unless you can show at least a 5% increase in revenues for all the teams. He also makes it clear that he does not like how Michael Andretti is making enemies by trying to get Cadillac into F1, which will become a reality next year, but without Andretti's involvement. I wonder if he is being completely candid about the personalities that he discusses. He does not put any drivers down, especially Nikita Mazepin or Jean Haas. He dispels the drama depicted in Drive to Survive as manufactured and much ado about nothing. Although he says that the abuse they suffered on social media after the You're a Collie and Mazepin episode of Drive to Survive was just horrendous, which we cannot wait until we get to review that one. He also says that he liked Michael Massey. I have very strong opinions on Michael Massey, which the rant on that will also take place when we review the final race of 2021.
I cannot wait for when that happens. Gunter actually has a lot to say about the FIA, which is the governing body of F1. He always complains about the inconsistencies of the way the rules are applied by the stewards from race to race, which is still an issue to this day and probably will be an issue until full-time stewards are appointed. But he's very careful not to single any individual out. I think he becomes a little more critical of Mick Schumacher, one of the drivers for the 2022 season, and of course, the son of the very illustrious seven-time world champion, Michael Schumacher. So as the season progresses, he goes from saying that he's a good guy to questioning how genuine he really is. And by the way, good guy is his byword for almost everyone that he likes, because he, of course, calls Charles Leclerc a good guy. And he knew Leclerc from the 2016 season when Leclerc was the development driver for Haas and also winning F3. I also really appreciate his insight into drivers' managers. He claims that currently they're being filled for a lot of yes men and not by the people who would be most interested in the driver's best interests. I also think that it was revealing that he, and by extension other team managers, really hate dealing with drivers' managers to the point that they would rather keep drivers that are maybe underperforming, then start negotiations to get a new driver in. I'm just curious, did anyone convey that to Red Bull?
Clearly not.
Obviously, there. I just can't wait for this season and seeing what more changes they bring in both to the main team and their satellite team. Aaron, why do you think Gunther is not fully transparent about how he feels about various people in F1?
At the time that the book was written, he was still team principal of Haas. So he could not create controversies that would have caused issues with Gene as the team owner, other team principals, and drivers. I really think that is the biggest one because at the end of the day, I don't think it would net him anything positive except create enemies. Part of his persona is he tells it like it is. It appeared in the book he held some of that back. I also don't know what the legal requirements were for him with writing the book on certain things. Was he not allowed to really give those opinions? Or maybe that's he just really didn't want to put that into the book because the main focus seemed to really how it affected Haas and keep it on the track of what the book was. Like he goes off on the rally stories a little bit, but apologizes for it because he brings it back to what we're all here for, which is the diary of Haas in a year.
Absolutely. And to bring it back to the book, despite Gunther's unwillingness to share his utmost private thoughts, he provides a lot of universal lessons about dealing with failure, celebrating small victories, and handling tragedy. I particularly liked his mindset and how he was very clear that in the beginning, he kept blaming a lot of things that were going wrong for Haas on bad luck. And I agree, the whole Mazepin situation had nothing to do with anything that Gunther could possibly predict would happen. There's also, they include three times that FIA applied a black and orange flag rule inconsistently and against Haas's detriment. And that actually led to them not securing any points for a number of races. As he keeps describing the season, he starts to become more retrospective. And he starts to focusing on the positive. For instance, when he secures MoneyGram as a sponsor for Haas, that is a big, big accomplishment. And I like that he realizes that and he pauses to take credit and to also be very grateful that that happened. However, going back to how he does not want to reveal too much, he never says what other team was trying to get MoneyGram to sign with them to undercut Haas and was offering a third of the investment that Haas required in order to make that happen. I would love to know which team that was.
Me too. But I think he would not state that because of how negative that would make the other team look, which would then probably open him up for some controversy. The other thing he never followed up with, which I was really hoping he would, was tracking the point of what they would have gotten if the black and orange flags were not applied in those races. He said, "We'll work on that. We'll come back to you." I would have loved to know what points they were projected to get or where they would have hypothetically ended up.
No, that's a great point because he does say that he specifically tasks some people to do this math that he was going to present to the FIA, and then we hear nothing. So
Right. So it's
that was a
curious. So
good.
either it wouldn't have changed where they landed in the constructors, or maybe figured out the numbers and it still wouldn't have made a difference for where they ended up. I mean, I don't know, but I would have liked to have actually closed the loop on
You
that
would have
one.
liked. You would have liked to see the math.
Yeah, I want to see the resolution on it. That would have been nice.
I also love his reaction and description of what happened in Brazil, where Kevin Magnussen scored his pole position. So I always heard that he scored the pole position. I honestly do not remember if Drive to Survive covered it because I don't think they are ever in Brazil, which is criminal because in 2024, that race was insane. It's really admirable for Gunter to, of course, be jubilant and be happy, but also be realistic in that there was so much luck and so many things that had to happen exactly the way that happened for the car that he claims, and I agree with him, is definitely worse than at least six cars on the grid, and at best is the same as the other three cars. And for a driver in that car to actually score pole position is an accomplishment that everyone should be proud of. And I think Kevin Magnussen probably will never forget because I don't think he'll ever get that close. Obviously, he's not on the grid.
I was going to say, I love the photos that they inserted in the book to show the jubilee from that. They put two pictures in, which were great. That's just genuine hard work and happiness paying off, which was nice to see.
So the tragedy that he mentions, and I like how he includes it, is he dedicates the book to one of their employees, Harvey Clark, who died very tragically from cancer at 31. And I think really his genuineness comes across during his description of who Harvey was, how they treated him after his diagnosis became a reality. And for Aaron and I, probably hit a little bit more closely than other people because we had a colleague who unfortunately succumbed to cancer way too young and much more suddenly than Harvey's passing was. So reading that really brought up a lot of those emotions. And I thought that was probably the most affecting part of the book for me. Aaron, how does Surviving to Drive bridge the gap between fans and the F1 world?
Gunter did a good job with this one. The recommendation for Baku being the Grand Prix to visit as a first-time fan actually solidified where we had talked about going. So last year, Ina and I were saying how Baku, we were hoping that that is going to be our first F1 race. To have him say that was nice to read. We made a great selection.
It validated our expertise.
What is curious, and I'll hit on this in a little bit further in the podcast, is providing advice to fans on how to be respectful when you're asking for a selfie. The book gives good insight as to how the teams think, which is interesting to me. You really get to understand more of the strategy behind it, like why they didn't do anything to the car in 21, they pushed for 22, and how budgets make sense, and the less corporate aspect of Haas and how smaller teams work. He does talk about the fan access and how exciting the fans are and the numbers that are turning out to races, and comparing those watch numbers, how they're creeping up to NASCAR numbers, and talks about the growth. I thought it was pretty neat how he really described the unveiling in Vegas with fans and the fact that the hotel sold out a year and a half ahead of time, which seemed like it was a bit unfortunate for some of the teams because maybe they didn't get their room block requests in. He really hit on the excitement between fans and F1 and really attributed it to Drive to Survive. So Ina, was there any juicy gossip that stood out to you throughout the book?
So unfortunately, there was no juicy gossip about current drivers or personalities on the grid. He had a lot of interesting stories about Niki Lauda, with whom he worked at Jaguar. I love the movie Rush, and we will definitely cover it in one of our future episodes. So one of the people in Rush about whom the movie is about is Niki Lauda. Gunter asked Niki, so what did you think about Rush and how Daniel Brühl, who does a brilliant job in the movie, portrayed him? And Niki, of course, took credit for the performance and said he taught him how to be him, not how to play him, but how to be him. And I thought that was a wonderful little tidbit. There's also a story which I thought was hilarious, where he and Niki land in Japan, it's raining, they get picked up by a driver, and that driver drives very slowly and is obviously not a good driver. And as Gunter says, both he and Niki realized that fact at the same time. But Gunter was just going to let it go. Niki could not let it go. He kept saying, like, stop the car, I need to drive it. It got to the point where they actually stopped, I believe, at a gas station. Niki got out, tried to get the driver out of the car with Gunter coming in between and trying to hold him back. I mean, that story is just very revealing about what Niki was like, but also hilarious in the way Gunter says it, because he brings his personality into that story. The only person actually Gunter doesn't have anything nice to say is Ralf Schumacher, who of course is Mick Schumacher's uncle and Michael Schumacher's much less successful brother. And he obviously is not Gunter's fan. And I think the feeling is mutual, because Gunter implies that Ralf is basically stupid. He also states several times when Ralf attacks Gunter for not giving Mick Schumacher the opportunity to succeed at Haas, that instead of just blaming the car, the team, Gunter, he could provide very useful advice. And I keep thinking, is he trying to say Ralf doesn't have any advice? Because he was not a really great F1 driver. Actually, I don't think he would have been on the grid if it not for his brother. So yeah, so these are the things that stood out for me. But Aaron, what insider revelations or controversies did you uncover in the book?
One theme that really stuck out to me was, it was mentioned a few times, the impact Drive to Survive has had on the popularity of the sport, the popularity of the personalities involved. Gunter himself and how at times can impede their efforts to get their jobs done. At the start of the book, there's a lot of excitement about it, and he loves being able to take the selfies, and that pretty much stayed through. They really like engaging with fans. However, it seems there is going to need to be some happy medium or something put into place where they're not having to try to run to the bathroom without having it take an hour so they can get back. If it hits the point, which it sounds like maybe on some circuits, not all, it's impeding their ability to get their job done. And while it's exciting to get to see the individuals in person and be on the track, if it gets to the point where they get so frustrated that they can't get their job done or breaks their focus, I would hate for it to come to a point where they start to pull back from the cameras and limit access. And so for me, it's not a true controversy yet, but I would hate for it to get to that point. Right now, F1 has really, they have pulled the curtain back. Everyone has full access in. There's so much transparency with the sport, with the drivers, with the teams, access on the grid, to have that limited, because it's really exciting to get to have that insight, especially as a newer fan to the sport. Speaking of being on the grid, is having the celebrities on the grid at Miami and other races. And they're perfectly happy to have photos taken, or they take their selfies or show that they're there. But the minute that anyone from F1 wants to talk to them, their bodyguards swoop in. So I think that if they're going to be there, they need to play by the F1 rule and let Martin Brundle talk to you. He is the most entertaining to watch as he chases people down on the grid. So I hate to hear that side of it too.
Me too. I just want to add about celebrities. One thing that really annoys me is when they show a celebrity who obviously has no idea what F1 is, why they're there, what they're doing, but they want to be on camera and promote whatever they're promoting. It just looks so manufactured that it takes me completely out of the experience. I think, yes, show which celebrities are there, because of course it's fun. And if they meet the drivers, that's also fun. But I don't think there should be that much focus on celebrities unless they're a true fan.
Or they're invited by the team. Like when the teams post who they're hosting in their garage, how Haas had Conor McGregor and everyone was so excited that he was there and he was willing to talk and take pictures and say what a big fan he was. That's different. Yes, I agree. So the celebrities that really follow the sport or are interested or seem more appreciative to actually be at the race and engage and meet the drivers and show their support, absolutely. But the ones that just want to be there to say that they're there because they're a celebrity, I think you either need to engage or just not show them.
I just want to say that I really appreciate the fact that really big tennis players love F1. And when they're there, whether invitation on the team or by themselves, I do believe that they're genuinely interested. Like, for instance, George Russell has a friendship with Novak Djokovic.
I
never
love that.
Thought, yeah, and never thought that could and only happen because they both live in Monaco. And Monaco is the holy grail of where I want to go for Grand Prix race. But our
yes.
podcast would need to be beyond successful, or we need to be invited in order to have that happen.
Anything's possible, Ina. Didn't someone said that in one of the books or movies we've been covering? Anything is possible. The last thing I would say, as far as not controversy or concern, but the global safety of the drivers and the racers. He did talk about the concern in Jeddah over a missile strike that took place 10 miles from the circuit. That's scary. That's scary for the drivers, the engineers, and everyone involved. Other than COVID, Bahrain was canceled in 2011. So anywhere in the world, there's tension. And so I just hope that the drivers and the team stay safe no matter where they go, because I mean, it could happen anywhere. It doesn't have to be the Middle East. I think that was one thing that he touched on. That was a new revelation to me. I didn't expect that to have such an impact or really think about where that could go.
Absolutely. So overall, I enjoyed this book as a companion to Drive to Survive and for my own F1 knowledge. However, I probably would not recommend this book to brand new fans who do not know much about F1 or never watched Drive to Survive. Gunter drops a lot of names, Bernie Eccleston, Flavio Briatore, Stefano Domenicali, who wrote a very lovely foreword to the book. But that might not mean anything to a casual or new fan. And Gunter doesn't provide sufficient explanations of who these people are. However, for those people who know, these are very fun Easter eggs. I also want to say that this book includes a lot of crude language, which personally doesn't bother me, but I can understand how it's not to everyone's taste. However, if you're a fan of Gunter, you will totally understand that's how he presents himself. Which leads me to my next point is that I actually both read the book and I listened to the book in audiobook format, which is very conversational and is read by Gunter himself. And that was a very fun experience. Erin, what are your final takeaways from Surviving to Drive?
I enjoyed the book. It was a little disappointing that he really didn't go into personal opinion other than how he felt about Mick Schumacher. I'm also surprised they didn't cut him sooner based on accidents and things. So I was just curious how it unfolded. I did not listen to the audiobook. I wish I did because I think in my head as I read it from watching him on Drive to Survive so much, I could feel like I could hear his voice, but to actually hear it in his voice. So I would probably recommend the audiobook because it seemed to be a little bit more entertaining. I agree that it would not be for brand new fans. I think you have to watch the Drive to Survive seasons to really have an appreciation for the book. One of the challenges, it's stuck in time. I'm reading it end of 24, going into 2025. And part of it, I'm like, eh. Okay, this already happened. So I'd say the relevancy, like what the shelf life of the book is really going to be for fans. It was an easy read. It had a good flow. I thought the tone was engaging. I don't mind cursing. I curse like a sailor myself. Overall, I would recommend the book in audio format.
We have one mystery left to solve from our last week's episode. Erin told us that her first choice for a hot lap with an F1 driver would be Lewis Hamilton. I'm shocked as all of you. And then she had two backup that if he was unavailable, she would go with them. But she didn't tell even me the identity of these backup, except to say it would not be Charles Leclerc. Since then, I have been racking my brains trying to discover who these backups could be and decided that we could settle it by playing a truncated version of 20 questions, only three for me, of guessing who these backups are. Erin, are you ready?
Ready.
So the question is, are both of your backups on the grid this season, 2025, and it doesn't include reserve drivers?
Yes, both are on the grid.
Is one of your drivers a rookie?
No,
Are both of your drivers teammates?
they are not.
I think one of them must be Oscar Piastri. And my second choice would have been Lando Norris, but you said that they're not
They are
teammates.
not teammates.
Would it be Carlos Sainz?
You have half of that correct. Oscar Piastri is one of my alternate drivers I would pick for a hot lap.
Can you give me one bonus clue?
I can
So
give you
I.
two bonus clues.
Okay.
It is going to be the driver who is probably the least likely that you would think that I would guess, pretty obscure. The other clue is it is one of my son's favorite drivers. So for our listeners, I have a 3-year-old and a 4.5-year-old. They each have their own favorite driver, not mine or Ina's. We are covering most of the grid between my family and Ina.
So, since I know who their favorite drivers are, it's a very easy guess for me. So, I'm assuming it's Max Verstappen.
Ding, 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 ding. You got it right. That is Tommy's favorite driver. And Lando Norris is Patrick's, but because they're not teammates, it is not Oscar and Lando.
There we go.
I
We
like the
can.
game. Good questions.
Thank you.
Are you surprised?
A little. Because I thought, first of all, I thought the question about reserve driver, you would say yes. And then I would guess Oscar and Bottas because I know you love him.
I
And
do. I'm a big fan of Bottas, but I would entrust Max for the hot lap.
you know, me too. I said in the last episode that I wouldn't go on the hot lap with my favorite driver. And it's not because of his skill level. It really isn't. It's because he has the most abominable luck, which we will cover in the future episode. And so something could just happen.
That would be completely out of his control. I get that.
Correct. And he's getting so much better, but sometimes he makes inexplicable mistakes. And I just don't want this to happen on my hot lap. But I do have to say, last year, my favorite tennis player went on a hot lap with Charles Leclerc, and both of them weren't unscathed after that experience. So I have hope. Although Jannik Sinner, who's my favorite tennis player,
Yes.
did look a little shook after that experience.
To be honest, I mean, think about what a hot lap entails. I mean, even Bono, when Lewis took him end of last year after he was finishing with Mercedes, he looked like he was having a hard time in the hot lap.
And that tells you something because Bono knows when things go wrong, things go right. So next week, we will begin our journey through Drive to Survive seasons with a review of season one and introduce a special guest who are close personal friends of the drivers and never appeared on any other podcast. Another hint we can offer is that not all drivers in the paddock have these friends. So one of the McLaren drivers have a friend like that, and another driver does not.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode.
Would also love to hear from you, whether it's your thoughts on today's episode, your suggestions for F1 books, shows, or movies to explore, or a nod to the driver who you want to take you on a hot lap. Connect with us on Instagram, YouTube, or X, or drop us an email at readingthegrid@gmail.com. Your ideas fuel this podcast, so don't be shy.
Thanks for joining us on Reading the Grid. Until next time, keep your engines running and your pages turning. See you soon.